This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Welcome to Here and Back Again. I'm David O'Callaghan, and this is a podcast looking at all things releasing weekly on streaming and in cinemas, with a bit of pop culture chats thrown in. First things first, if my voice is sounding a bit rough around the edges, Mariella Fostrop, eat your heart out. My apologies, the dreaded man flu, or, well, it's probably more likely the boy flu, has struck me down and I'm feeling all kinds of wonderfully woozy. But I will suffer for my art. That's the kind of trooper I am. And also, while the content is low in quantity this week, it defo makes up for it in quality, both on streaming and in cinemas. So, shall we begin?
Look, I know that I said that I would tell you everything. But how much of everything do you really want to know?
You regret me and I regret you. You couldn't handle your liquor and you can't seem to handle the truth.
You write songs about who you wish you were, not who you are. What if you wrote songs about the guy that maybe wants things that he shouldn't?
Who'd want to hear a song about that?
I think everybody would.
Yes, yes, good times. Daisy Jones and the Six lands on Prime Video, a series which Amazon first ordered way back in 2018 before Taylor Jenkins Reid's book was even published. Whoa, god damn it. It's about a rock band fronted by two feuding yet charismatic lead singers, Daisy Jones and Billy Dunn. Set in the 1970s, they are shot to music superstardom when their first single is a surprise hit. Tracing this rise and fall of this fictional Fleetwood Mac-style rock band from LA's Laurel Canyon scene over multiple decades, Riley Keough, the granddaughter of Elvis, would you know, plays Daisy Jones, and Sam Claflin stars as Billy Dunn. Done as a documentary-style drama, this one looks absolutely classic. It's got that Almost Famous vibe. It's got all those documentaries you've watched over the years. The adaptation comes from the creators of Spectacular Now, while directors include Spectacular Now's own James Ponsoldt, who helms the first five episodes. Will there be original music? You betcha. A total of 24 songs were written for the series, including some by Blake Mills, Phoebe Bridgers, Marcus Mumford and Jackson Browne, amongst many others. They're even releasing an actual album, a real album, on the day of release on Friday, so look out for that. And yeah, I absolutely adored this book. I love this book. I hope it shoots up the book charts because it's so, so good. Yes, I am absolutely pumped. Bring it on. Daisy Jones and the Six. First three episodes drop today and the rest weekly. Oh, whoa. Bring it. Now on Prime Video. And speaking of being pumped,
I'm going to Mandalore so that I may be forgiven for my transgressions.
May the Force be with you!
This is the way.
There's something dangerous happening out there. And by the time it becomes big enough for you to act, it'll be too late.
The Mandalorian Season 3 finally arrives on Disney Plus, almost 3 years since its last appearance. We'll talk about Boba Fett later. Reuniting once again Baby Yoda, or Grogu, with the Mandalorian as he continues his space-wandering adventures, avoiding the Empire. Not much has been revealed about this new season, which hopefully means loads of retro surprises. Listen, I know we didn't really care that much for Boba Fett. However, if you didn't watch the last few episodes of that series, I would highly recommend you go back, because it was basically Mandalorian Season 2.5, getting us back in the zone, ready for Mandalorian Season 3. Pedro Pascal returns in the title role. Well, his body double returns, but his voice is definitely there. In fairness, he's a very busy man fighting off mushroom zombies and all sorts of crazy shit in The Last of Us. Also returning are Giancarlo Esposito, Carl Weathers, Katie Sackhoff and Amy Sedaris as series regulars, while Christopher Lloyd and Tim Meadows turn up as new cast additions. Exciting times. When Star Wars is done right, it can be friggin' awesome, and this is the one. Or this is the way, should I say. The Mandalorian Season 3 is now on Disney+. It's a really strong week for non-English content. First up, we have Tonight You're Sleeping With Me on Netflix. This is a Polish series based on the book of the same name. and it's the story of a journalist who is stuck in a passionless marriage and must choose between her distant but loving husband and a younger ex-boyfriend who has re-entered her life. That's the Polish drama Tonight You're Sleeping With Me, now on Netflix. Wrong Side of the Tracks Season 2 on Netflix is a Spanish thriller returning for its, yes, second season, following its hugely popular first season, when his teenage granddaughter falls victim to the drug dealers overtaking his neighbourhood. A fed-up war veteran takes matters into his own hands. Oh yeah, that is Wrong Side of the Tracks Season 2, now on Netflix. Framed, a Sicilian murder mystery on Netflix, comes from, yes, Italy, no surprise there. In this one, after two hapless TV technicians stumble upon a murder scene, every step they take to avoid becoming suspects lands them in deeper, deeper trouble. Generating decent buzz and full of laughs and all sorts of crazy stuff, kind of has a murder in the only murders in the building type vibe. That is Framed, a Sicilian murder mystery, now on Netflix. And coming from France, we have the crime docuseries called Monique Olivier, Accessory to Evil on Netflix. This series looks at one of the country's most notorious murderers from 1987 to 2003. Michel Fournier's crimes made him the most infamous murderer in France. Whether he was a mere pawn or an active accomplice, his wife, who is currently serving a life sentence, remains an enigma. That is Monique Olivier, Accessory to Evil, now on Netflix. The original title of The Pimp, No Fucking Fairy Tale on Prime Video was Luden. The series is a German production made for Prime Video. This dark and twisted show is about sex working and the exploitation happening to women by the men in this job. Getting very strong early positive reviews. It's a tough watch, but could be worth diving into if it's your sort of vibe. So that is The Pimp, No Fucking Fairy Tale on Prime Video. And finally, in the non-English section, of course there has to be a K-drama or Korean drama, and we're all here for it. Divorce Attorney Shin on Netflix is based on the webtoon of the same name, and in this one, driven by a personal tragedy, a pianist turned lawyer navigates the complex world of divorce, fighting for his clients to win by any means. There's a huge amount of K-drama fans out there, and this one definitely will tick that box. That is Divorce Attorney Shin, now on Netflix.
I hate the picture. All I see is a young man in the process of losing his life.
Michael was my big brother.
Michael Matthews from Fulham became the youngest Briton to conquer Mount Everest.
He was left alone on the mountain. It's an awful way to die.
20 odd years later, we're sent this photograph of a body. It looks like it could be Michael.
It might be.
My heart says we should go and find him. And if we can, bring him home.
Finding Michael on Disney Plus is a documentary that shares details of what happened in 1999 when Michael Matthews became the youngest Briton to summit Mount Everest. But 3 hours after he reached the top of the world, aged just 22, he disappeared into the blinding snow and his body has never been found. Aged just 10 at the time, Michael's brother Spencer was profoundly impacted by the loss. Now, 23 years later, Spencer Matthews sets out on a journey to Everest, battling the harshest of conditions to find out the truth about what happened to his brother. This unique documentary, 2 years in the making, brings together local experts, a 10-man search team, and modern drone technology to uncover the mystery behind Michael's disappearance. This one looks like an absolute belter. I'm all in. That's Finding Michael, now on Disney+. In Sex Life Season 2 on Netflix, Sarah Shahi returns as Billy and basically get the cold shower running, because if the trailer's out to go by, sexy times are back. Yes, there are fans out there, Sex Life, people are very excited. People are, did I mention excited? Very excited. That is Sex Life Season 2, now on Netflix.
Welcome back to Next in Fashion. I just ripped my pants. Come Anyone off, have a needle it. I can borrow?
One designer
will win $200,000
and launch their collection on renttherunway.com.
It's all about exaggeration and playfulness.
I want to win, so I'm going to bring it.
I strive for perfection. That's what I'm going to give you.
This will change your life.
You'll create the next
iconic trends in fashion.
All under the watchful eyes
of fashion royalty. Donatella Versace!
Bring all the pressure. I'm ready.
move over Project Runway and making the cut, because Next in Fashion is back with its second season on Netflix. Up-and-coming designers compete to impress expert judges, hoping to win career-changing prize money and a chance to become the next big thing in fashion. This series returns to the runway with Tan France of Queer Eye fame and a shiny new co-host with Gigi Hadid, now also on the team. Looks pretty kind of fashion-y, and I'm not going to lie, I kind of do like watching an old stressful making clothes kind of show, and I'll probably be all in unless they begin to annoy me. But doesn't matter. Next in Fashion, season 2 is now on Netflix. One for the kids this week, we have Karate Sheep on Netflix. Yes, I just said that out loud. Two clever sheep use karate and high-tech gadgets to protect their flock from a hungry wolf who's determined to make them all his dinner. Oh, how we laughed. Giving off some serious Looney Tunes vibes, this kind of has the whole Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner thing going on, and it's now streaming on Netflix. That is Karate Sheep. Over on Disney Plus, we have Abbott Elementary Season 2 Part 2. Award-winning, yes, the Emmys, the SAGs, this show can't stop winning. This workplace mockumentary featuring a group of passionate teachers and their somewhat tone-deaf principal who are determined to help their students succeed at a struggling Philadelphia public school. Again, really strong fan base out there. Well worth a look. Abbott Elementary Season 2 Part 2 is now streaming weekly on Disney Plus. And also returning for a Season 2 Part 2 is The Problem with Jon Stewart. Season 2 continues with all new episodes available weekly, tackling crime, defence policy, inflation, the backsliding of democracy, as well as all your usual Jon Stewart class stuff. So, very exciting, very good. That is The Problem with Jon Stewart, Season 2 Part 2. Now on Apple TV Plus.
Chris, ready for you. Ladies and gentlemen, you already three, know that it's him again. Two, letting them hang, no feminine.
And
we're live. Pass the bees
like we used to say, and put it down. And finally on streaming this week, oh, this is a little interesting experiment. We have Chris Rock, Selective Outrage, live on Netflix this weekend. Yes, Netflix are going live. It's all a bit bizarre. Chris Rock makes comedy history as he performs stand-up in real time for their global live streaming event. Sadly, for those of us over this side of the world, it's 3 a.m. here. Oh, but fear not, because usually these live, inverted commas, events then pop up next day so you can watch it next morning when you get up. If this model proves successful though, you can imagine that live comedy, music concerts, etc. are the new future for Netflix. That's Chris Rock's Selective Outrage, live on Netflix, and it's no coincidence it's taking place 1 week before the latest Oscars. Can't wait to see what material he comes up with. Now, I did say finally on streaming just before Chris Rock, but obviously I completely lied, because there are two movies which were recently in cinemas and are now out there on streaming awaiting your eyeballs. First up, we have Empire of Light, now on Disney+. It had a pretty decent run in cinemas and has now landed and is ready to go. Hillary, played by Olivia Colman, is the manager of a faded old cinema in a rundown English seaside town in the turbulent 80s and is struggling with mental health issues. Detached from her life and career, it takes the arrival of Stephen, played by Michael Ward, a young black man with his own struggles against the daily racism he encounters, to jolt Hillary out of her soporific existence. While not entirely autobiographical, writer-director Sam Mendes drew on his personal experiences to inform the characters in Empire of Light. Definitely worth a watch. A lot of people probably didn't catch it in the cinema, because it's probably one that, you know what, is perfect for streaming. I would highly recommend it, watching it. It's beautifully shot, really, really interesting. There's a lot going on. Now, there's a lot happens. There's probably too many plots, but I did thoroughly enjoy it, and it is, as I said, beautifully shot. So that is Empire of Light, now on Disney+. And for all you YA heads out there, even though it's not technically, well, it is YA, it's not based on a YA book, but it feels like it should be. Scott Mann directs this thriller, Fall, which is now on Netflix, about two best friends who climb a 2,000-foot radio tower and find themselves, yes, stranded. Oh, kids today. It's actually a really, you know, I love a high concept drama, and, you know, basically it's going to be two kids hanging out of a tower for 90 minutes. I'm all in. If you're afraid, if like me, you're afraid of heights, oh, hold on to that couch and don't look down. Well, except to find that glass of wine, which you will definitely need with all the stress coming your way in this one. So this is a most perfect 3-star. That's the best way I can tell you. So that's Fall now on Netflix. And that is your streaming for the week. Some, yeah, some absolute crackers, as I said. Small but perfectly formed. And now it's time to look at cinema.
My name came back. The past came back too.
There may have been a time when Damien had your back.
No friends in the industry.
But that's not what he's doing now.
My brother's been my brother's mate. Ain't no kidding me up that.
Before I got locked up, I was the best.
You a coward, bro. And a fraud. Try spending half your life in a cell.
Watching somebody else live your life.
I had to draw the line.
I'm just getting started, little brother.
I had to draw the line between my brothers and my enemies.
I'm coming for it all.
He's not gonna stop.
Then you make him.
Let's get ready to rumble! Yes, oh yes, yes, yes. Sorry. I do like the Rocky and Creed movies quite a lot. Yes, Creed 3 is now in cinemas. Very exciting. Still dominating the boxing world, Adonis Creed is thriving in his career and family life. It's all about family these days. When Damien, a childhood friend and former boxing prodigy, resurfaces after serving time in prison, he's eager to prove that he deserves his shot in the ring. Sound familiar? The face-off between former friends is more than just a fight. Oh yeah, this is Kang versus Killmonger, the battle we have all been waiting for. And Michael B. Jordan makes his directorial debut on this one. So, the big difficulty for him here is how do you make the 9th movie in the Rocky universe different enough from the previous 8 that came before him? Well, by bringing in Jonathan Majors as a villain who operates in the grey, as in someone whom you can kind of understand why he has all these chips on his shoulders, it's almost like Majors, his Damien, is the Killmonger of this piece. And I've said it once, and I'll say it a million times, Jonathan Majors just brings something extra to the screen whenever he is up there. Throw Michael B. Jordan into that head-to-head, and it's all kicking off. Game on. Coming in at 2 hours in length, there's probably about 20 minutes too much chat going on, but I do understand the necessity because you have to set up the plot. But when it gets to the fight scenes, holy crap, this is where Jordan's directing truly shines. Treating the ring like a chessboard and showing camera angles and views I haven't seen done before, it's absolutely awesome. There's one particular sequence, actually, it's a 3-minute round where Jordan truly goes for something new and different, and people are either going to love it or hate it, but I thought it was an absolutely amazing set piece and stunning to watch. Seeing it in IMAX, holy crap. A Rocky or Creed movie wouldn't be one without the training montage. And boy, oh boy, are these lads ripped. Oh my God, what beautiful, beautiful men. Holy feck, people. Do you know what? I actually felt like I was having a workout while watching them, while eating my nachos during those scenes. It was just stunning, stunning stuff. Sadly, there's no Sly Stallone in this one due to an ongoing shouting match, but Creed and Michael B. Jordan have proven that the franchise can survive without him. Much better than Creed 2, this one will have you dancing, prancing and running straight to the gym after you see it. Yeah, loved it. That is Creed 3 now in cinemas. And coming in with all the Oscar buzz behind it this week, we have Close. Close is a Belgian movie where two 13-year-old boys, Leo and Remy, have a close friendship at school and in the flower fields where they and their parents pick the harvest for home. Their close friendship is thrown into disarray when their schoolmates notice their intimacy, causing a rift between them. It won the Grand Prix at this year's Cannes Film Festival, a top award second only to the Palme d'Or itself. It is also nominated in the International Film category at the Oscars. So that is Close, also now in cinemas. And that's your cinema, yeah? So, you know, you can go high, you can go low. See what I did there? I'm just back from the gym myself, you know? No. Okay, 3 things in pop culture to round things off this week. First up, Succession is heading to an end. Oh, Lord. The hit HBO drama will come to a conclusion with its 4th season. Yes, that's the one that's just about to start. Like what? Creator Jesse Armstrong broke the news in an interview with the New Yorker this week. It's not the biggest surprise, I suppose, given that Armstrong himself has hinted at the end and Brian Cox has been allowed to moan about Jeremy Strong's method acting. for a month or two now. The series will return for season 4 on Sunday, March 26th on HBO and Monday, March 27th on Sky Atlantic and Now TV. Next up, we have Stranger Things. Fans prepping themselves to say goodbye to Stranger Things after its fifth and final season got a nice little surprise this week. The hit show will take on a whole new life as a stage play, Stranger Things: The First Shadow. Netflix announced this on Wednesday, and the play will have its world premiere later this year at the Phoenix Theatre in London. Yes, we can fit it in. We can skip across the sea. It's great. Oh, I love it. Tickets for the show, which is being produced by the streaming giant and directed by acclaimed film and theatre director Stephen Daldry, will go on sale this spring. I thought the Taylor Swift saga, when those tickets are announced, was going to be the problem this year. I think we have a new problem child to worry about. So that is Stranger Things, The First Shadow, the play coming to London in the autumn. And finally this week, New Line Cinema and Warner Brothers Pictures have hammered out a new multi-year agreement with Embracer Group AB's Middle Earth Enterprises on the new Lord of the Rings movies. Oh yeah. This is not the news that Amazon and their Rings of Power snooze fest wanted to hear. Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh have also chipped in that they've been in regular contact about this. Funnily enough, this comes after Jackson admitted earlier in the year that despite initially contacting him for their streaming series, Amazon then went on to ghost him. Oh, bad, bad Amazon. What the new stories are, who knows? Will they be Lord of the Rings amazing or The Hobbit terrible? Only time will tell. But at least there'll be no Harefoots in this new venture. Anyway, there you go. Some decent goss there. Some decent news. Some fabulous streaming. Some great cinema. All is good in the land. This is David O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast. Wishing you all the best. And until next week, stay safe and binge happy. And now I can rest my voice, my soothing voice. Anybody got any honey? Well, hello there. Welcome to the Thunderdome. What magical post-credit journey are we going on today, I hear you ask? Or maybe you don't ask, but it doesn't matter because you're here. Well, I've had some very weird thoughts going on in my head this week. Maybe it was the flu drugs. But I got to thinking, scenes from a movie that scarred me in my youth. I mean, scarred. No, you'd think seeing Jaws at age 5 or 6 or whatever the hell I was, I'd blame my lack of swimming abilities. And that's, you know, scarred. But no, I really did like The Man from Atlantis too, so that was no excuse. Or seeing movies like The Exorcist or The Manitou or Zombie Flesh Eaters in the Inchcore cinema every week, age 7 and 8 upwards, they should have had some truly scarring scars. Truly scarring scars? Anyway. But nope, it's not that either. Because, oh my god, I'm shivering here. It was the TV adaptation of Stephen King's Salem's Lot. This is the David Soul version of 1979 that still to this day haunts me. And it's just one particular scene. And no, it's not the creepy vampire in the rocking chair. Oh, even though that's pretty disturbing. But it was the floating vampire child in the fog outside a first floor bedroom window of his friend tapping to get in. Let me in. Let me in. You can walk right off. Get out. Looking out for the clip for this podcast, it stressed me out all over again. I mean, hell, I live in a bungalow just so nobody can float inside my window. That's how affected I am. Anyway, what about you? What scene from a movie from your childhood affected you most? and still lingers in your mind. And no, Bambi's ma doesn't count. Well, maybe it does. Anyway, answers on a postcard or a DM to Instagram, please. And with that, I give you tap, tap, tap.
Let me in. It's okay, Mark. I'm your friend. He commands it.